obviously focusing sometimes on what's happening at the national level and how it could impact us here in Connecticut. And two big things have gone on. There have been talks, and in fact, they're happening right now as we speak, and it's sort of an unknown. It has to do with two election packages, if you will, coming from Washington. One is the SAVE Act, the other having to do with an executive order coming from the Trump administration on elections. And so I thought it was a great time to have back in studio with us the Secretary of the State, Stephanie Thomas, is here. Welcome back.
Good morning. Happy to be back.
Well, let's start with the SAVE Act, which really looks at registering to vote and now requiring people to have either a birth certificate or have with them a passport. And some of the I would say, the pushback on this move is that it's going to make it a lot harder to register to vote. Is sort of that your take?
Yeah, absolutely. The SAVE Act is basically, the purpose of the bill is to purportedly stop non-citizens from potentially voting, even though we have seen in study after study that this is virtually non-existent. Here in Connecticut, we've had three cases in the last 25 years, just to give you a sense of things. And on the face of it, it sounds fine. Like, I don't think anyone disagrees with the notion that non-citizens shouldn't, you know, we don't want non-citizens voting, right? But it's making American citizens jump through an extreme number of hoops. Even if you take aside the number of people who don't have easy access to their birth certificate for a number of reasons, someone mentioned a situation to me just the other day about being adopted and the way things were done, because he's an older gentleman, the way they did the names were different than on a birth certificate, so it doesn't match his identification. So there's all these examples, real-world examples, that other states have seen because they've already had these policies in place where American citizens are getting disenfranchised. They're actually eligible to vote but unable to, just because they can't present the right paperwork. So that's a problem. And the SAVE Act and the executive order just have a lot of other issues for Connecticut taxpayers and election workers.
So I, you know, focusing on the SAVE Act, and I don't know if there's like a compromise here. I mean, I'm not a tech savvy person, so I'm certainly not going to say what I think is the resolution here. But I feel like there is a way to compromise with this. So if we needed, let's say, birth certificates, you know, I can understand where people may not have passports because some people don't travel. They don't have the money to travel. So why would you have a passport? Mm-hmm. So that part I understand. The birth certificate thing, though, I'm like, those are recorded somewhere. Someone's got a record of this person. And I'm wondering if there is a way that that database could be brought up. So when we look at Connecticut elections, for example, when you go to, if you've already registered to vote, but you don't have your ID, they usually have like a portal or something when you go to talk to the people there where they can kind of cross check. Are you real? Are you the person we think you are? And I'm wondering if that was put into place, you know, for people who can't access that, because you're right. We've heard from people who have been adopted, don't have that paperwork, weren't allowed to get that paperwork because it was part of a closed adoption. So those things exist. But I feel like there's, if we've got, you know, people who understand the tech end of it, how we can't create a way to find that, I feel like would be a compromise.
I mean, as with all things in elections, you could do anything you want, but it takes time and resources.
And money,
but,
sure.
Yeah, but the bigger issue in the situation, it's not that people can't find their birth certificate. It's that a real world situation may make your ID different from your birth certificate. So the example we always hear are married women who changed their last name but didn't change their birth certificate. And again, if you have time and resources, you could educate every single person. You would give them time to get their documents. But we already know in elections in particular, a lot of people don't think about it until a week or two before, and that might not be time. There was a woman in New Hampshire who needed to find divorce papers from two marriages ago in Florida. But she showed up on Election Day to vote, not realizing their law had just changed.
So was she blocked from voting?
She was blocked from voting, and they had over 50 cases. So when you consider the numbers of people we know don't have these types of documents at the ready, and you marry that with a very fast timeline, the executive order is supposed to take effect next week. And most people don't even know because there's no money to educate the public.
Which we've seen, that's our Secretary of the State, that we've seen even when we talk about low voter turnout in Connecticut, and it's everywhere. But when we talk about low voter turnout, I think the number one thing when you and I first started working together in this regard was I would say, well, isn't there a way we could, you know, inform the public better? And you're like, Melissa, if you could get me a budget, then thank you so much because I have zero, you know, I don't have dollars to invest in that.
I like to talk about the push for real ID. Everyone knows about it. It was a well-resourced campaign. It has still taken 9 years, and people still don't have their real IDs.
Right.
It takes a long time to move 100% of the public. So to me, it feels like we're prioritizing a conspiracy theory over the rights of American citizens, because we have seen time and time again from states, like I said, many states have similar laws. So they have seen time and time again a much greater number of American citizens who were denied their right to vote because of a clerical situation compared to non-citizen voters.
Would real ID, Secretary of the State, would that solve the issue? So instead of needing a, that doesn't solve the issue.
I can stop you. A lot of people think real ID would be accepted. That is not an acceptable form of identification in this bill. A lot of people don't realize there are several levels of real ID. Most states have the level that is not accepted. There are five states, I believe, six at the most, that have what's called an enhanced real ID.
Okay. Yeah. But the average person, I'm going to take my ID out because I got to check it now. But the average person, when they go to the DMV and they upgrade, if you will, to a real ID, that is not what you're talking about. That's not an enhanced level.
Correct. No.
Okay.
No.
Interesting. What if we made it where people got enhanced? I mean, again, you'd then have to have people go through that process.
I was going to say, I have the same answer for, you know, I talk about policy, and I think these are sloppy policies because they're not well thought out. I always, you know, from day one in this job, I focus on implementation. How does it impact the election workers? How does it impact the cost to towns? And I always speak out against policies that I think impact us poorly. You can do any, you can have any policy you want, but writing policy is not a magic wand. It doesn't just make it happen. You have to think about how it gets implemented, and you have to think about how it gets funded. And, you know, all of the things we're talking about, there are countries where there's a national ID. You're born, much like we get our Social Security card. You get an ID that you use throughout your entire life. That costs money. And it takes time to roll out. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, on paper, everything sounds great. But unless you can figure out how to implement it fairly so that you're not penalizing American citizens, then I think you have to go back to the drawing board.
We've got the Secretary of the State here, Stephanie Thomas, and we're talking about some of the big moves happening up in Washington, or at least some of the attempted moves happening in Washington, including the SAVE Act, or also some executive orders that have gotten a lot of pushback, honestly, in recent days, including requirements to people when they want to vote. And I mean, I'm going to go to kind of a controversial place, Secretary of the State, because it's interesting to me. I don't know if people realize, you know, just to think outside the box a little bit, I understand with, you know, fraud in voting. Look, I mean, I hate to bring up the bruise that we've seen just here in Connecticut, in Bridgeport. Okay, so we do know election fraud exists. However, I think if you take a step back and you look at this, my concern here is that we're actually punishing the voters we need. And what I mean by that is when you hear people get upset about more and more laws for American gun owners, people who legally are following the rules here. Well, when you hear about people who are being turned away because they don't have the right documents, but they legally live here, they have what they need, but they don't have their birth certificate or they don't have, you know, the enhanced real ID. To me, those are votes we need. And not only have you turned them off that day, but you might have turned them off going forward because it was a bad experience, what have you. Those are the voters we need. And I think we're missing the focus here. To me, I think the focus needs to be on how do we actually get people to the polls, not for presidential elections, for local state elections. I mean, and something I've noticed just with my own kid in the public schools is they're starting to teach the kids about voting, not who to vote for. But they'll do like, hey, who loves dogs and who loves cats? You're going to put your ballot in and we're going to tell you at the end who won the election. These are things that
That's
I know my own.
Great.
Right. They're teaching that. I didn't learn how to do elections until I went to my first poll, at the legal age. So I think we're missing the boat here a little bit. I'm not saying that clean elections are always happening, but I don't know if this is the way to address it.
You raise a good point there. Let's talk about fraud. We definitely have some cases pending in Connecticut, and that is a perfect example to me why the U.S. Constitution says the time, manner, and place of elections are to be determined by the states. We don't have the same problems that maybe Arizona does, or Minnesota. Like, every state has different cultures, values, populations, etc. I often say it's kind of like common sense in Connecticut. Like, do we think someone is risking ICE picking them up to vote for their board of selectmen? Like, I don't think
that's not
the problem.
Happening here. No.
The problem that I'm trying to solve in Connecticut, I want more whistleblowers in Bridgeport.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, they need to be educated about what they can and can't do. Because as we've seen in some of these cases that have just come up, people have been tricked, lied to, told they can submit an absentee ballot or vote or whatever. So I would love to see public education in multiple languages in Bridgeport. And I want people picking up the phone and calling the State Elections Enforcement Commission to say, hey, someone came to my door and told me this. I think it's not true. And I think only then, if we start cracking down on all these cases, that we can chip away at that problem. But things like the SAVE Act and this executive order, they're trying to apply a blanket policy that I think would actually make our system less safe. Because when you talk about, turning in suspects to the Department of Justice, like, that's the language. I'm not making that language up. Absent any other details, when you talk about election workers getting up to 5 years of jail time because they made a paperwork mistake, like, all of a sudden, people will start backing away. And I don't think, like, that's why people would be reluctant to pick up the phone. Like, you know how that,
deterrent.
They get nervous about, like, I'm not dealing with government because they might now arrest me or turn me in. And, you know, I just don't think blanket policy works in that way.
Totally fair. I mean, I do think, you know, in regards to, again, like, to be, you know, clear, you know, using, and I hate to keep using Bridgeport, but I think Bridgeport's the best example of it. You know, when you look at things like, I'm sorry, but like ballot stuffing, which we've caught on camera. I mean, that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. I think that does come down to, you know, I do think we sort of are lax on punishment. I mean, we have somebody who is caught clearly on camera doing this, and she's still the vice chair of the Democratic Party. But do these executive orders address that? They don't.
That's my point.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. It's not solving Connecticut's problem.
Right.
And we have three branches of government, right? So the executive branch, we have worked with Bridgeport election workers on process, training, looking for issues that need a legislative solution. the legislature has passed laws to close some of the loopholes that we've identified. Most of them are closed. We have a law pending that would, as part of the election monitor process, allow us to do a public education campaign, go into public housing, go into nursing homes, and educate about, like, someone tells you this, it's not true. And all of these things have will make and have made the whole Bridgeport system better. And there's nothing in anything coming out of Washington that is solving our problems. In fact, it's increasing our costs. Right now, just at the state level, the executive order that's supposed to take effect next Friday would cost about $250,000 more in terms of changes we would have to make to our databases, forms, etc. The cost to the towns, I have no idea, because if everyone has to register in person, that just changes how our towns operate, how it's staffed, etc., and on and on and on. There's even something that might make our brand new tabulators obsolete. So the $20 million we just spent
it was maybe
like,
a waste.
I don't know.
Right.
And that's my point. It's sloppy policy because we don't know.
Well, I guess we're going to have to find out. Secretary of the State, I thank you so much for even having this conversation, talking about it. And like I said, we'll see what happens next. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
You too.